credit scores, down payments, interest rates. Car buying can be a numbers game, but you don't have to be a math expert to get the keys to your dream car. Just use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. Crunch your numbers and get personalized results so you know exactly how much you'll pay each month for your car. It's like having a magic wand for your wallet. Presto! The car you've been wanting is now within reach. So hit the road and leave your calculator at home. AutoTrader.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene Fodor.
Gene, was good.
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano.
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant, and this is Stuff You Should Know, the podcast.
That's right.
This is part of our ongoing death suite, which is sweet.
Yeah, we've covered death a lot because death is multifaceted.
Sure.
You know, and this reminded me of the, I guess we covered Green Burial, not in its own podcast,
yeah,
but in like different ways to...
What to do with the dead body?
There you go.
That's what I thought it was in too, but I'm surprised we didn't do a podcast dedicated just to that. Maybe we should.
Yeah, I looked up because I'm interested in that for myself, and there are some lovely places right outside Atlanta.
To be buried greenly?
Yeah, where you can just be wrapped in a shroud and buried in a field.
Which?
Ripped to death by coyotes.
Left in a field? They don't leave you in a field.
No, well, they bury you in a shallow grave.
Oh, okay. For the coyotes to come get you.
No, they said they don't have a problem with that, but I'm not one of those people that cares about that.
Yeah.
Like,
about what happens to your body.
Like, I would do a sky burial. That wouldn't bother me for vultures to pick me apart. Like,
yeah.
Use the body. If it would feed an animal, great.
Why not donate it to science?
Yeah, maybe I'll do that. I'm not precious about that. My body after death. I'm not precious about my body in life.
Yeah. Why start then?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, so anyway.
Well, a shroud does kind of technically count as a coffin, Chuck.
Yeah, back in the day, you didn't have a lot of money.
Right, or if you're into being picked apart by coyotes.
Right.
But the whole point of a coffin, or what constitutes a coffin, is it provides a barrier between the body and the ground.
Yeah.
And technically a shroud does that. It's a really, really poor coffin.
Yeah.
But that's the whole point. It's that the body's encapsulated in something. That just dropping a body into a grave is undignified, you might say. Even cremating a body without some form or fashion of a coffin is considered undignified. And you'll be hard-pressed to find a crematorium that will let you just put your loved one on the conveyor belt and let them just kind of flop lifelessly toward the flames.
I don't think they flop.
Well, I mean, if they're jostled, they're going to flop.
Okay.
Yeah, especially after rigor's done.
The coffin, the word coffin, we're not going to do any Merriam-Webster stuff because that's who would start an article like that.
Or do it six times in an article.
But we will say we like to give root words, and of course Greek and Latin are involved here with the Greek kophinos and Latin kophinus.
Mm-hmm.
They're always like, oh, yeah?
Right.
I'll change that K to a C and that O to a U.
And no one will ever even remember the Greeks happened.
Exactly. So that's where the word coffin came from. But here in the United States, we generally refer to that vessel as a casket, whereas in places like England and Australia, I'm sorry, Great Britain and Australia,
Good going.
They might say coffin, even though a lot of people here think that's like a word you shouldn't use.
Well, yeah, their casket still means a place to like keep your valuables.
Right.
Right.
Your baubles.
Right.
Yeah.
Here in the U.S., if you go to a funeral directorium, also called a funeral home, you're going to find that they'd never use the word coffin.
No. And you know, it's pretty subtle, but the language is definitely... They don't say, we'd love to pick out a coffin for your husband's dead body, and then we'll dig a grave over there and put it in the ground. They will say things like, we would like you to pick out a casket for your husband. And
from our display area.
From the display area. And we will take you there in the casket coach, not a hearse, and place him in the internment space, which is not a grave.
Opened. And then we'll close afterward rather than filling or digging the grave.
They don't say words like digging and ground.
Basically anything that that brings to mind the guy from Phantasm.
Yeah.
Does the funeral industry avoids those words?
Yeah, and of course we've ruined 6 Feet Under and the Fisher and Sons boys.
Such a great
show. Michael always did such a great job of, you know, being the proper funeral director and using all the words that you should use, like casket.
He's good at it. And then he turned into a serial killer.
No, well, on Dexter, yeah.
So there actually is a distinction beyond where you live with the word casket and coffin.
Sure.
There's a slight difference.
Shape?
Yeah, it's basically shape. A casket is a long rectangle, mm-hmm. and the top is usually split so you can...
No, that's a coffin.
That's a casket.
Oh, yeah, that's a casket. A coffin is the hexagonal.
Right.
Right.
A hexagonal box.
Yeah, and that, you know, back in the day, you had the old pine box. Actually, a lot of those were just rectangular, but some were, you know, had that familiar sort of keyhole shape.
Well, back in the day, in the 19th century, the person who was responsible for carrying out your funeral services and building your coffin was usually the local carpenter, and he undertook your funeral service, hence the word undertaker, from what I understand.
Yeah.
But it was usually somebody who built wagons and kitchens and whatever. They also built coffins, too. And they built them to suit.
That sounded to me like our first casket fact.
Well done, Chuck.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jerry, for going the extra mile there.
And if you like that, you're going to love this episode because this place is lousy with casket facts.
Yeah. We won't play the sound effect on this one, but I thought another interesting fact because, you know, I like origins of phrases and things.
Mm-hmm.
If someone casts a pall over a room, a pall was actually a dark cloth that they would put over the casket to, I guess, cover, you know, block out the bad juju of having the dead body in there.
Right.
So you would cast a pall over the casket.
Yeah, or if you're me, you cast a pall over any room you enter. That's fun. No fun anymore, everybody. Can we talk a little bit about the funeral industry for a second?
Yeah.
About the casket industry, I should say, specifically. Yeah. There's still some furniture companies that make caskets on the side.
Like Lazy Boy?
Yeah, I don't know if Lazy Boy does it, but they represent a very small
they
segment
should.
Of the casket
industry.
That's
the ultimate Lazy Boy. You know? Your forever chair.
Right, exactly. Well, they actually have caskets for those people. It's called Goliath caskets. They're oversized caskets built to order. Oversizedcaskets.com.
Huh.
Anyway.
Of course there's someone that does that because that's a common thing. You know, caskets aren't, you know, some people of girth.
Sure.
That's pretty embarrassing, you know, when you can't fit in your casket.
Right. And I went and looked, and these are very dignified caskets.
Of course, they're just larger.
They're for the larger person.
Double wides.
Wow. There's also, so one of the largest casket makers, Batesville, originally started out as a furniture company.
Uh-huh.
So there's like this whole origin of, yeah, I'll build your chair and I'll build your coffin for your uncle too.
That makes sense. It's carpentry.
Yeah. And then, that's kind of the way it went. There were some groups that started to consolidate and just make caskets around the turn of the 20th century, the beginning of the 20th century. And, you know, that was fine. They kind of created the industry. And then it was like the 50s after the Korean War when metal caskets became like all the rage.
Yeah, because that was mod looking and that was popular at the time.
It was. And you'll also find in the funeral industry, it was easy to, subtly exploit the grieving out of their money. It was very cheap to mass produce metal caskets.
Right.
And so they were sold. There was a huge profit margin with them. And I think by the 70s, half of all caskets were metal.
Yeah, well, because what better way to protect your loved one from the elements and the harsh afterlife that they may encounter
mm-hmm.
than with a good old solid metal encasing?
Yes, exactly.
Which also happens to have greater profit margins and is cheaper to produce. So.
It is. It's cheaper to mass produce. The other aspect of a metal coffin and the rise of the metal coffin, it changed the casket making industry because it's really expensive to get into metal coffin making. Apparently, it cost about $1 million just for the dies to make a standard metal coffin.
Oh, really?
Just for the dies alone. So this kind of consolidated the industry down to fewer and fewer companies that were making metal caskets. So it became a real industry at that point.
Yeah.
And then ultimately the casket industry started to suffer and decline thanks to advances in medicine. There were fewer deaths, so their profits dropped or their revenue dropped. And then starting in the 80s, people said, you know what? Maybe cremation isn't so bad.
Right.
And so in 1985, I think 15% of people opted for cremation. And then by 2011, it's like 45%.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And every time somebody gets cremated, the coffin industry dies a little bit.
Yeah. Although, you know, like you said, you can still have a casket to be cremated in. I know we covered this in the cremation podcast.
Yeah. Well, you have to. Like, you can't find somebody who will just let your...
But that can be super cheap. Like, sometimes it's even cardboard.
Well, it's supposed to be because it's got to burn.
Yeah. But, I mean, at the very least, wood will also burn. But you can you can spend a little bit more money. Or you can get a temporary encasing, an outer encasing that is more attractive to show the family. And then when push comes to shove, they remove the outer casket and shove you in.
It's like a rental casket just for the service.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can actually rent caskets, period. Like, even if you aren't being cremated, just for a more showy experience. And then they'll, you know, then you get the pine box treatment.
Right. Because nobody loves you.
Yeah, it's expensive, man. A lot of people don't have the money to pay for a big funeral, and it's a lot of people really believe in that kind of thing. It's really sad for them, you know?
It is. Luckily, there's such a thing as Walmart and Costco. Both of them sell caskets. Walmart has a casket for $1,199. That's the Our Lady of Guadalupe casket model. Uh-huh. And then Costco.
Guadalupe?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Costco has the same model for $100 more.
Really?
Yeah, I was surprised that it's not exactly the same. But it's nice to see that the big box retailers aren't price fixing coffins.
Yeah, it's great to see Walmart selling coffins.
But I mean, it's like that if you need a coffin, and they're attractive looking coffins. I think they're fiberglass.
Have you ever laid down in a coffin? Probably not.
I haven't.
I haven't either. I would, just to see what it felt like. They look comfy.
Did you see the thing about the 6 Feet Under Club in San Francisco?
Uh-huh.
There is a club where it's like, hey, you and your partner, swinging partner,
sure.
Partner.
Whatever
you know
you're
what
into.
Mean.
Yeah.
Your sex partner. Okay. Let's just call it what it is.
We're grown-ups.
Can come lay down in our coffin, and we'll bury you. And you guys can do it. And we are going to watch you on a night vision webcam that's going to be projected on the walls of the club above.
Where's this, San Francisco?
San Francisco.
That was wacky.
6 Feet Under Club. And you can email and reserve a space in their coffin.
Huh. Is there any room in the coffin? That's pretty tight.
I would imagine it would have to be a larger, but maybe a Goliath coffin.
Yeah, a double one.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, I will never do that, but it's interesting to know it's out there.
It is out there in San Francisco.
I like knowing my options.
Well, let's talk about the anatomy of a coffin, Chuckers.
The most important thing, of course, is that it is a barrier from the body to the elements. No one, or actually, I don't care, like I already said, but most normal people don't want to think about their loved ones' bodies like decaying and being eaten by, you know, being worm dirt.
Right.
But one thing they cannot tell you is that it's illegal to say that we have a casket that will permanently seal the body. Like, it's against the law to claim any sort of permanence. Even if it's one of these new gasket coffins. What are those called?
It's called a protective coffin.
Yeah, which actually has a rubber gasket. So it's sealed much tighter, but they still legally can't say, like, it'll protect them forever.
Right, because it will protect them from the elements, but there is such a thing as decay. Like, your body's going to decay into nothingness. And apparently, I guess the funeral industry was selling coffins based on the idea that the body was going to survive forever.
Yeah.
And with this impermeable seal that the protective coffins had, I mean, it wasn't letting anything in, but it also wasn't letting anything out.
Which is a problem.
And in an airtight environment, anaerobic bacteria gets to work, and as they start putrefying the flesh, they expel methane gas as a byproduct. And there's this thing called exploding coffin syndrome, which was most apparent in mausoleums, where a coffin would just blow up. And sometimes they would blow up so much that it would blow the mausoleum door open.
Yeah.
Like a huge methane explosion from the gas built up from the decaying corpse in this protective coffin. So now they have ones that don't let anything in, but they burp gas out.
Yeah, they're called burping coffins.
Right, which is a great name for a coffin.
Yeah. So,
but so is exploding casket syndrome.
Yeah, boy, could you imagine being a cemetery worker and seeing a mausoleum door explode wide open?
Yeah, you're just like, I've seen it all.
I would quit my job that day. So it depends on where you are in the world, what you're going to get with your coffin and with regulations. You know, in less developed countries, obviously, they're less regulated. You could still be wrapped in a shroud in some parts of the world.
Right. Here in the U.S., in the West, they're basically public health regulations, which is why that place for the green burial is designated a green burial place.
Yeah.
So I'm sure the body won't come in contact with the groundwater, I think is what they're trying to keep from happening.
Yeah, that was in their FAQ.
Yeah. So that's pretty much the whole public health regulation. And it's gotten to the point where most people are buried with cement and casement around them, right?
Oh, is that what they do these days?
I think so.
Yeah, I think I knew that, actually.
Like, it's so funny. Like, we're all still 6-year-olds
right.
at our core. It's like, ew, dead body, gross. I can't let that get in the water.
Yeah, that stuff doesn't bother me.
Drinking dead bodies?
No, I wouldn't want to drink a dead body now. But seeing one. I mean, I'm the guy who poked a head floating in a bucket, you know, in the hospital that
time. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that story.
I didn't poke it, but I mentally poked it. It didn't bother me.
That is grody.
If you are in the Western world, you're probably going to be dealing with wood or metal or fiberglass. If you live out in the desert, they may use things like local products, like clay or stone,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I guess we got a lot of wood here in the United States, though. Particle board.
Yeah.
And like we mentioned, the sad, sad cardboard cremation vessel.
Right, which, again, if you're being cremated, you probably don't care.
Yeah. I was all set for cremation, and then I thought, I don't know. Is there anything and the green burial seems like a good option.
Sure. Just become one with the dirt.
Maybe. But I like the idea of being scattered as well.
Or, again, helping somebody. Helping other people.
Yeah. But they'll still, like, if you donate your body to science, did they not give you any sort of, like...
No, you can't be embalmed or anything. I guess you probably could. If, like, say you're going to the body farm, you wouldn't be able to be embalmed.
Sure.
And I'm sure there's, like, memorial services, but I don't, as I understand it, that's another thing that's eating into the casket industry's profits is body donation. Hey, man, I think this is a perfect time to have a message break from our sponsor.
Agreed.
Which means our jingle. Stuff you should know.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was booted!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and Vlastar on the business. I understand now. It is a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Jean. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano!
Jean, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so I think this is actually a great time for our second casket fact.
Oh, I like these already.
All right. Back in the day, in the early 19th century, that was sort of a, they called it a grave body snatching period.
Yeah.
And people were into snatching up bodies, digging up graves, exhuming people, if you will, and basically selling bodies for money for medical research. It was a way to make a buck, or yeah, doing research on your own.
Medical College of Georgia was, they found dozens of skeletons. I was like, I don't think it was hundreds. Dozens of skeletons,
yeah,
of people who were dismembered, and they figured out that all of them had been, yeah, stolen from graves.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Of course, that wasn't in the early 19th century, was it?
It was in the 19th century. Not that early, but it was, okay, it was in the 19th century.
So they developed something, well, various things to, you know, protect bodies, like locked mausoleums and vaults, mm-hmm, and then something I think is kind of neat called a mort safe, which is basically an iron cage put over the coffin that's like sunk into concrete.
It's like what people use to protect their air conditioners today.
Yeah, exactly.
But over like a grave.
So that was a mort safe, and that kept people out. They had guards sometimes, staffed,
yeah,
guards.
I think the caretaker doubles as a guard. But they had people who they hired as guards to protect a specific grave?
I think if you had enough dough,
wow,
you could have like you know, the mausoleum with a guard.
That's pretty cool.
And that's, you know, that's if you're rich and wealthy.
There are also, if you weren't wealthy, other ways to thwart grave robbers was to put heavy planks.
Yeah.
To backfill the grave with rocks instead of dirt, which might not have kept somebody out, but they would have made quite a bit of noise digging you up.
Sure.
And, yeah. Have you ever been to Oakland Cemetery?
Oh, yeah. I go all the time. Well, not all the time, but I go.
It is beautiful.
A couple times a year.
Yeah, Yumi and I went and just did like this, just walked around.
Yeah.
Like there's some mausoleums there that like there's no way you could have gotten into.
Yeah, for those people that haven't been to Atlanta, that is what our probably oldest and like most famous cemetery.
Yeah.
It is our Parade de Lachey.
It's yes, it's our Nick Lachey.
I've been to that one too, actually, the one in Paris.
What?
Parade de Lachey.
Oh, is it the one with Jim Morrison?
Yeah, of course.
Nice.
And I think Oscar Wilde is there and Chopin.
Wow.
But, you know, Morrison's the one that you go by and there's like joints on the ground,
yeah,
and like tabs of acid and stuff. And then you always see like the random guy kind of hanging out, like waiting for everyone to turn their back.
That's funny.
A bunch of dirty hippies, basically.
Jean jackets. Give me a break.
In Ghana and other parts of Africa, it is kind of cool because they will, they have a very sort of a joyous way of celebrating death with their bright color coffins and even odd shapes that would pay honor to what this person loved in life. I saw one that was like a giant shoe, and this guy, this African dude
fetish,
was just like, you know, it must have been his relative, and he was just so proud to show that they were burying him in a giant shoe.
So it's like to the dead in Ghana, what a piñata is to like a kid in Mexico.
Really?
Yeah, they have like piñatas that are like shaped for, they're like different,
they're
stuff.
Specific?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not always just a kookaburra?
No.
Oh, okay.
There's like lots of Hello Kitties and like.
Really?
Yeah, oh, yeah. There's some great piñatas out there.
And then the other example they gave in here is like if it was a businessman, he might be buried in something that resembled his luxury car.
Or, yeah, I saw that one.
Or a fisherman, it might be a fish-shaped
it's
coffin.
Like the fish finally got him back.
I guess so.
He's in the belly of it. So, Chuck, you mentioned things that coffins may be made out of.
Yeah.
You mentioned like wood, fiberglass.
Elm, oak, hardy woods.
Bronze is still used on occasion.
Yeah, sure.
And that's the shell of the coffin.
Yeah.
And then the inside, you'll find the lining, usually some sort of rich fabric like taffeta,
yeah,
or velvet or something that looks like that. Maybe velour if they like juicy clothes, that kind of thing.
Yeah, silk maybe.
Yeah, and it's stuffed with batting.
Yeah,
to keep the corpse nice and comfortable.
Sure.
And that's pretty much it. You've got hardware on the outside, and that's a casket.
Yeah, it's probably gonna be warm colors here in the Western world. It's not Ghana. You're not going to see a lot of like brightly painted coffins and stuff like that.
No, but also they kind of avoid like you're probably not going to see a black coffin anywhere.
Yeah,
those are called receding colors. They're dismal and of desperation and despair.
I feel like I've seen a lot of like light gray and things like that.
Yeah.
Or just wood color. If you get like a really nice wood, like cherry, sometimes it'll just be in that, you know, that'll be the outer shell.
Right.
And those are pricey.
Yes, they are. As a matter of fact, the average cost of a funeral in the U.S. in 2009 was $6,560, which is less than I thought.
I think a green burial is about half that.
Yeah, I can see that.
I think they're like $2,000 or $3,000.
Because the coffin in the average funeral was $2,295, the average cost of a metal coffin in 2009. Which, in 2007, funeral homes and crematories pulled in $11.95 billion. And one of the ways they pulled in that much was from casket sales.
Yeah, and I don't know if we even should say this out loud, because it sounds like an unfounded accusation that cheap coffins are purposefully made ugly so they can upsell.
Yeah.
Do you think that's true?
It's
probably true.
Well, I know I've read that the funeral home industry marks up caskets that they buy. They resell them for up to 500%.
Yeah.
More than they paid for them.
Well, it's a business and that's their product, you know.
It is. It's a business and the customers are in a really easily exploited place.
Yeah, I don't know though. I just think it is a business, and because it deals with death, it's very easy for someone to say like you're exploiting these people or taking advantage of them when
right.
they're. I just don't think that's true. It's
no,
like,
I think that you can't cast that net across the entire industry.
Agreed.
I think that that's.
I'm sure there's some shysters.
Thing. Sure,
but there are also
ruin it for everybody.
Yeah,
you know,
bad apples, Josh. Well, you know, we have a lot of opulence here in the United States. Some people get into that. But apparently in Australia and Great Britain, they're a little more reserved with
yeah.
what they'll spend on a casket. In some cultures, like the Jewish faith, it's very common to not have any sort of garish thing. They want you to be buried in something very plain so you're not distinguished as to your, like, place in life, you know.
Yeah, apparently they'll even – the hardware that they use to carry
uh-huh.
you – is removable. So, like, when you're buried in a plain box.
Yeah. I like that. That's
yeah,
nice.
That's cool. You want to talk about the bow people?
The hanging coffins of the bow.
Not to be confused with the hell of the upside down sinners in Big Trouble in Little China.
Right.
Although this is in Sichuan province of China.
Yeah.
The bow people are an ethnic group that populated the area, and they had this really neat tradition of putting the coffins of their deceased up on like 300-foot cliffs,
yeah.
little just crags, little caves, and for centuries no one has had any idea how they got them up there.
Yeah, at one point they had close to 300. Now it's only about 100, and 350 to 400 feet. And did you see pictures?
Yeah,
it's crazy. I mean, they're like, I don't see how they did it. They think now they might have lowered them down, but they still. You know, that they're on, it looks like they're on wood planks that mm-hmm. are sticking out of the cliff. So how'd they do that?
Yeah. I don't
just
know.
Can't figure it out.
It's pretty neat. It's like a little village of coffins just kind of clustered on this cliffside.
Yeah. With the idea that having your relatives higher up is a place of greater respect to be looking up at them, because that's where the deities were, at the tops of mountains. And
right.
that would place them closer to the deities, I
yeah.
guess.
You go up here now.
Yeah.
Because you're dead.
Yeah. It's very interesting.
What about the Egyptians? They had the money coffins, if you ask me.
Yeah, and we covered this with Tut, obviously, the big sarcophagi. But didn't they believe that you would just be sent to your, you know, all this stuff would go with you?
Yeah, you'd need it in your afterlife for
yeah.
your journey to the afterworld, the underworld. And I guess it was the opposite of what the Jews think. It was the more socioeconomic...
right.
status you can bestow upon a grave, the better off the person's going to be in the next life. They'll
show
be like,
off.
"Oh, you have a bejeweled casket.
Right.
You're okay in our book.
Bedazzled."
Yeah. But they actually had texts, what we now call the Egyptian Book of the Dead, was originally called the it grew out of what are called the Egyptian coffin texts.
Yeah.
And there were two, the Book of the Dead, the coffin text that became the Book of the Dead was for everybody, regardless of your socioeconomic status, and it told you how to be buried. And we've done How Mummies Work, so we got into that a lot.
Yeah.
And that's basically what we relied on. But there was also one for the pharaohs, the kings, the elite, and those are the pyramid texts.
Yes, and that's the one that later evolved to the Book of the Dead, right? The pyramid text?
I think the coffin text.
Oh, no, yeah, it's a pyramid text.
Yeah, the pyramid text is separate. That's the one for the elite.
Right, and that's what evolved through the Book of the Dead.
Oh, it did? Okay.
Yeah. But I think what was in the coffin text was contained within the pyramid text, right?
Yeah, I think the coffin text was an umbrella that gave birth to both. It was the original one. And it actually had the first described cosmology ever recorded.
Yes, the Book of Two A's within the Egyptian coffin text was the first time they basically said, here's what happens to you after death.
Yeah, pretty
or
cool.
Could happen to you.
And it's basically you cross from one part of the sky into a lake of fire and then across into another part of the sky.
Yeah, and the coffin texts have spells and things to help you out as well in your journey.
Like, check out my bejeweled casket. I'm okay in your book. Mwah. Chuck, we couldn't talk about coffins if we didn't talk about a really interesting and neat trend of the 18th and 19th century. Maybe even 17th, but I think 18th and 19th century, called safety coffins.
Yeah, it was. It's a common fear for people to. It's called taphophobia. Taphophobia,
mm-hmm.
And
that's the fear of being buried alive.
Yeah, and that it's a real thing, and people had it then, and they have it now.
Well, they had good reason to have it back then because
it happened.
Yeah, there was a book called Premature Burial and How It May Be Prevented. It's an 1896 book by a social reformer named William Tebb. And a couple of co-authors. And actually, one of the co-authors was a doctor who himself had been prematurely buried.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They went over, like, account after account, and they even had a chapter called Dubious Accounts. But
yeah.
They basically came up with 219 instances of narrow escape from premature burial, 149 cases of actual premature burial, 10 cases of vivisection before death. So the person they thought was dead, they started to cut open, and they weren't dead.
Yeah. And then 6 feet under club.
And then two cases of embalming before death.
Wow.
So, like, it happened. Before embalming, it was like there was no way to tell you were dead.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that was the problem is medical science hadn't advanced to the point where you could always tell if someone was dead.
Exactly. And there was such a thing as cholera, which apparently gives you the appearance of being dead even when you're not. So there was good reason to fear being buried alive. And as a result, this thing called the safety coffin came up.
Yeah, and there were, I'm sure you've done some other research on this, there were all different sorts of methods that they had, from a vault that had like a little window and a wheel you could turn on the inside to let yourself out, which would be nice. Sometimes it was just a breathing tube.
Yeah, the one that was patented in 1896 by a guy named Count Carnice Carnicki, which is awesome, he had something that was... There was a tube with a spring going all the way to the 6 feet down.
Uh-huh.
And there was a little glass ball at the end of the tube, and it rested on the deceased's chest.
Yeah.
And if any movement of the chest happened, like you took one breath, anything like that, it would trip the spring. And this passageway would fly open to let air in, and a flag would rise up above your grave.
I'm still alive.
Yeah, we're still alive. So, that one was one of the most well-known safety coffins, and actually in Premature Burial and How It May Be Prevented, there's a whole little chapter dedicated to it. And actually, you can find the full text of that online.
Oh, really?
For free. It's really interesting
reading.
That's cool. Yeah.
There were also things that would trigger, like a bell ringing, one that even had a long-fused firecracker that I guess you could set off.
Yeah. that'll get the attention of somebody.
I guess so.
In that book, Tebb and his friends, they endorse to prevent premature burial, either safety coffin or cremation, where they're like, even if you are dead, then, or even if you're not dead, you're going to be dead afterward.
Right. So we guarantee you won't be buried alive.
Exactly. Because you'll be cremated.
Right.
We're not even going to bury you.
The ultimate safety coffin.
And there's this guy named Dr. Timothy Clark Smith.
Uh-huh.
In 1893, he died in Middlebury, Vermont. And he's buried to this day, which is customary, in Evergreen Cemetery. And if you go to his burial mound, there's a 14 by 14 inch of plate glass that opens up onto what was once his face, 6 feet down.
Wow.
So that people could come check on him and make sure he was dead because he had taphophobia and was very, very much afraid of that fate.
You know, that's got to be tied to claustrophobia somehow.
Well, yeah, they think the APA, being they, think that you had some sort of early childhood
sure.
encounter with an enclosed space.
Yeah.
And either you develop taphophobia or you become the Batman.
Oh.
That's their judgment.
That, you know what that sounds like? That sounds like a casket fact.
Let's hear it.
Ah. Oh man. It's like sweet nice. Nectar.
Let's see what else. I got a couple more things. You got anything else?
I got nothing else. Go ahead.
So you can, we said that the average coffin is like $2,300.
Uh-huh.
You can also shell out $30,000.
Of course you can.
Batesville, casket company makes the Promethean. And it is the coffin that Michael Jackson and James Brown were buried in separately. They had their own coffins.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
What's the deal? Is it just like?
It is nice looking.
Yeah.
Rich, luxurious, like navy velvet
right.
interior lining. It must be gold, but polished to this high shine.
Uh-huh.
It's a beautiful casket, I have to say. There's no reason in the world for anyone ever to be buried in a casket like this, but it's out there.
Right.
If you want to go the other way, you can go to DIYcoffin.com, and there are schematics to build your own very plain coffin.
I saw that. I thought about that. It might be a nice thing to do.
Build your own coffin?
Yeah.
Remember that King of the Hill?
Uh-uh.
There's a King of the Hill where Hank builds his own coffin. He's talking about how he started. He's like, well, I looked into it, and long story short, I got the bug. No, he made his first try was terrible, so he gave that to Peggy.
Right.
And then his second try is really nice. He's gotten it down pat, and Peggy gets the one where like the top doesn't close all the way.
Right. That's what mine would look like.
It's a good episode.
I'm not a skilled craftsman, but I enjoy it.
Yeah. And then lastly, you mean I saw Mike Tyson do his little
Oh, did you go to that?
His little spoken word thing.
Was that good?
But we saw it in DC. It was great.
Uh-huh.
And he talked about, it was really sweet because I'm really ambivalent about him because, you know, it's just, he's a really, there's a lot to him, you
yeah,
know what
yeah,
I'm saying?
Sure.
But one of the things that he said he did was his mother was buried in a potter's field
uh-huh.
with an unmarked grave and like just a cheap box.
Yeah.
And he said the first time he made money, he had her exhumed and bought like the most expensive headstone and the most expensive casket he could find and had her buried in like this other nice cemetery.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah.
You know, there's a pauper's grave over by the drive-in movie theater here in Atlanta.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's just, yeah, it's a pauper's grave. And lots of like bad stuff goes on there now, apparently.
What?
Oh, like prostitution and stuff like that.
It's way worse.
Drugging.
Yeah.
I'm sure some teens are drinking.
That's probably not a good, safe place to do that.
No, I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, and there's also a Potter's Field, Pauper's Grave, in Oakland Cemetery.
Oh, yeah,
it's
right.
just basically like a big expanse of grass
yeah.
where a bunch of people who were poor were buried.
Yeah, I did Mount Vernon
oh,
when
yeah.
I was up there, you know, George Washington's place.
Is it cool?
Yeah, it's really neat because they still do stuff the old-fashioned way. You know, like if they need a room painted, they grind up dye and mix it with water and
nice.
All that stuff.
Wow.
But, you know, there is like, you know, he and Martha are buried in this like beautiful mausoleum. And then there's also like the slave, you know, grave sites.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, definitely like he freed all his slaves in his will, which was a good thing to do, I guess. But anytime you go to one of those plantation type things and you see like the opulence of his thing and then this other little
oh, yeah.
side area where
yeah.
the slaves are buried, it's just sort of like,
Yeah.
Well, that happened. That's a sad reminder.
It is.
And no one was visiting, like, the slave area as much even, and I was just sort of like, that kind of rubbed me a little bit.
Did you go over there and visit it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Nice. So, you got anything else?
I got nothing else.
That's coffins.
I was going to write this article a couple of years ago because it didn't exist because I wanted to do this.
Oh, good. I'm glad it came along.
I think that's just a lesson, kids. If you wait around long enough, somebody else might do something.
Well, then, since Chuck gave... Wait, I think, Chuck, that might be a casket fact.
What, is that the last casket fact?
Yeah. All right.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was booted!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene. I've last heard on the business. I understand now. The He's a wise man. Marie's a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Jill. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return. Your time won't. And we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, well, since we had our last casket fact, I got to say, if you want to read this article on coffins, you can go to howstuffworks.com, and you can type in that word, C-O-F-F-I-N, in the search bar, and that means it's time now for listener mail.
Josh, I'm going to call this very manipulative email from a Georgia Tech fan. Here we go. Peter in Virginia. He knows it's coming. I want to tell you guys how your podcast made a difference in my life. I recently found out that I have diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. As a part of the testing process to determine what stage you are, they shoot you full of barium and then perform a CT scan. The cancer cells divide rapidly, so based on how much the barium glows during the CT, we'll tell them how much your cancer has spread. As part of the process, you have to remain as still as possible for an hour prior to the CT, so as there's as little circulation in the blood and barium as possible. Then you sit for another hour, also as still as possible, while getting the body scan.
Jeez.
Needless to say, you feel very woozy after the barium, and it's a very anxious time. Your mind wants to wander into numerous worst-case scenarios while you are alone in a cold, dark room. However, I was overjoyed when the nurses said I could listen to my MP3 player.
I am glad you replaced that.
I spent both of those hours listening to your podcast, actually. I even got one of the nurses to tape my phone next to my head during the scanning process to ensure I would hear it. provided a great distraction and really took my mind off what certainly would have been very gruesome 2 hours. Also, the doctor said that beating cancer certainly is partly mental, and the attitude and response from the treatment have a large part to do with your response. And I'm a graduate from Georgia Tech, and if I could hear a Go Jackets on the air, seriously make my week and increase my odds of survival.
Oh, my goodness.
I know you both went to UGA. However, I'm hopeful that we can put aside our differences and come together to rally behind something like cancer. And I emailed Peter back and said, you're a very manipulative human being.
Yeah.
And he laughed and thought that was really funny and gave me and you a Go Dogs in the email.
Oh, okay.
And he thought that might be like a carbon offset.
Okay.
So, Peter, obviously, Go Jackets.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
Go Jackets.
Go Jackets.
Ramblin' Wreck from Georgia Tech.
Et cetera.
And that's where it ends, my friend.
Yeah.
And we wish you all the best, obviously, in your treatment. And let us know how it's going. We'll be thinking about you. Thank you, Peter.
Hang in there, buddy. Good luck. And keep us posted. And we're never going to say Go Jackets again.
That's right. That's your one shot.
Yep. If you wanted to try to manipulate me and Chuck into doing something we don't want to, you can give it a shot. You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. That was a Y, by the way. You can go to facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow. You can send us an email to stuffpodcast@discovery.com. And you can join us at our home on the web. That is stuffyoushouldknow.com. JackThreads has quickly become the online shopping destination for guys. Here's why. Everything on the site is up to 80% off. As a listener of Stuff You Should Know, you can skip the membership waitlist and get instant access at jackthreads.com/KNOW stuff. That's jackthreads.com/no stuff.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.